sort of a cave type of thing, or was it an open back with lots of wires hanging out, or?
They had to open the door, I think, at the back, or did they? There were certainly lots of wires.
Very complex.
The only thing that I can remember that looks anything like it at all is if you've ever been in a telephone exchange. I don't mean where they sort of push the plugs in, but I mean the sort of underneath that where all the wires.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you see it. For everything on which
like
you put
a
drum,
there,
that's right.
Thing.
For everything on which you put a drum, there must be 26 wires going, mustn't there?
Mm-hmm.
To the next thing, and there were valves and so on.
Very complicated. Now, your specialized training in this, what, it take 10 minutes to learn how to operate it, couple of hours?
I can't remember that. It didn't take very long to, I don't think it took very long. And then in turn, we would train the new ones
the
that
came
along.
In.
Yes, one had to be fairly precise, I suppose. The whole setting had to be very precise and checked.
Do you think you were screened before you got there as to your...
I haven't a clue, but I would think it's possible. It never occurred to me at the time, and it certainly hasn't occurred to me until relatively recently when, you know, a little bit to my surprise, one could start reading about it and putting it against the background which emerges from the from the reading. I suppose, although I don't know, it must have been a tremendous job if they screened everybody who, but I suppose.
Now, you would spend, 3 years at Bletchley, is that correct?
About that.
It would be, what, till 1944, approximately?
Possibly not 3 years then. Wait a moment, 44. Yes, I would think, because I think it was at the beginning of 1944 that I went to one of the small out stations and took charge of that.
Now, you had been promoted up to...
Well, I think I was a petty officer at that stage, and then
you
I became
up
a
petty officer,
and
you
I think
were
I was
a controller
a,
as well, is that correct?
Well, I was a controller whilst I was in Bletchley. Mm. Then I went over to Adstock and just took charge of the operation there, which meant that the controller in Bletchley would be sending stuff out to Adstock as well as to everywhere else. But, you know, in each of the outstations there had to be somebody.
Someone to put a finger on, yeah.
That's right.
Now, your division or section, you weren't restricted to any one particular code. You just received
no,
the
no,
menus.
Anything that came in, yes.
You
yes.
just received your menus.
And distributed
dialed
them or whatever, yes.
And
yes.
The distribution was what, your choice? Did it have priorities
no, well,
or what?
Not always. They would sometimes say they wanted it to go to so-and-so. As far as I can recall, every time a machine came free, it was reported in. So you knew exactly what was available for work.
I see.
So somebody from Adstock, for instance, I would have to report that I had such and such a machine or machines available. So
now,
that
how many of these would you have? In a,
well,
question,
I mean,
first of all. I know it's a long time
yes,
ago. I'm sorry to depress anything.
I should. There were 8 or 10, or maybe 12. You know, I can't remember precisely how many in the end there. Adstock and East.
Would there be
Stanmore
one a hut? Is that the idea? One a hut? Or?
Oh, no.
Numbers
no,
of them in each hut?
Yes.
There'd be like 8 or 10 in each.
That's right. And in Stanmore and Eastcote, which were big places, there were a lot, and I can't remember how many.
Mm-hmm.
Those were very big outstations. Gayhurst, Wavendon, and Adstock were relatively small. But well, I think I said to you there were about 2,000 wrens in the end. Well.
Mm-hmm. Now, this specifically a wren's job, running
mm-hmm.
these bombs.
Yes, nobody else did it. Except that the mechanics were there
mm-hmm.
for service
for
and all of
company,
well
yeah.
all of them I think had been, and they were in various service units. So we might have on with us a chap from the Air Force and a chap from the Navy, you know.
But it wouldn't you wouldn't be transferred, say, to an Enigma machine,
mm-hmm.
and probably out of security itself. You don't want
mm-hmm.
people to. Piece 1 and 2 together.
No,
maybe,
I think this
I guess,
would be it.
Probably. I'm thinking...
And the operation stopped as soon as the German war was over.
Because the Americans had their own, I guess.
Well, what we were doing was only European.
European operation.
Right.
I'm trying to check things here now. You don't recall any personal restrictions in the sense that you weren't to get married, you weren't
no,
to have children.
Nope.
The only thing was that they weren't going to let you go easily.
That was the only restriction. One or two did get married. They didn't care. You couldn't get out, of course, at that stage. You could, I suppose, if you were pregnant. I don't remember there being any stop on this. And as the war progressed, of course, one or two people did get married, and one or two people were pregnant and therefore were released. I got married after the end of the German war, so this didn't apply in any case.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any recollection of anybody saying you may not. All I do remember is that there was this, you know, to a limited extent in other jobs you could be transferred.
Some mobility, yeah.
Yes. And you were moved about from place to place, possibly. But there was some, because, you know, some people, for various reasons, had to be transferred. There was some, but there was very, very little. And
you're
I think you're in
for life, almost.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think it was made fairly clear to people that if they accepted a posting to P6...
That was it.
They liked it or lumped it. So you did get, I think possibly people got a bit of choice before they came.
Mm-hmm.
Were they prepared to accept those terms?
Those that weren't, of course, wouldn't be out of the first
place. Wouldn't,
yes,
and so they didn't know either we know anything about
I'm thinking security angle again, there was a thing called positive venting. Do you know anything about that?
No.
Okay, fine. And
not under those terms.
Under those terms,
no,
okay.
No.
Fine. I'm not sure about it.
No.
let me just see here. I'm thinking that the social life, your social life in the sense of your family, I gather they had a lot of questions, what are you doing?
I think one just said, I can't say. And that was that. You know.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, I can't say. And my family wouldn't ask anyway.
Okay.
They were probably quite intrigued. Because one knew that one didn't ask where one was posted, or, I mean, all right, my postal address was Bletchley, so. But, you know, lots of people in the services were P.O. Box something or other, and you didn't know where your brother or your father or your
mm-hmm.
boyfriend
yeah,
was going. I mean,
out.
Quite really, and people just were possibly curious, but not so much so that
mm-hmm.
that they pursued it, because if you haven't lived under wartime circumstances, it's perhaps difficult to understand, but people are prepared to accept the overall limitations and restrictions. You just do.
Mm-hmm. Not much choice. Could it not, the work seem, I'm thinking of the routineness of the work,
mm-hmm.
would it not get you down, I guess? Would be the
I suppose.
Depressed?
I don't think one got depressed again. You see, you're young, you're resilient, your time off, well, you make sort of
make
your own fun, don't you? There were dances in the quarters, and you met other people, and there were boyfriends fanning about, and there was always a fair bit of to do. Occasionally, there was a sort of security talk. There were quite interesting people coming to see one from time to time, which livened things up a little bit. I think it's perhaps true that some of the mass of the Wrens that came in knew SFA about what was going on, but I was perhaps in a better position. One or two of us who had been there for a long time and were in more responsible positions, simply because we'd been there longer than anybody else. Don't think there was anything very remarkable about that. It's just sort of the way it goes, you know. And we did know, because we were in contact with other people, and a lot of the others weren't, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
The controller's desk was where the stuff came in, and so you knew the Alexanders and the Wileys and the odd people who popped in with stuff. And we occasionally got interesting snips of stuff that had been cracked. For example, I told you earlier on, we knew about the Bismarck thing. We also knew, and this was another one that I remember very clearly, about the Scharnhorst and the Gneisenau going up the channel. We also knew nobody would believe us. I know now why, because the source of such an unlikely bit of information couldn't be revealed for fear of
blowing the whole thing.
And so, logically, people aren't going to believe that such and such a manoeuvre is going to take place when it's virtually suicidal. But we knew, I mean, I knew from what we were doing and what we were told.
So
you
were getting the odd bits when they were cracked?
Well, some of us were. I'm not quite sure how far down the line that went, but I knew.
It's interesting in the sense that the security was so great on the one hand, and yet...
Well, this was from people who with whom we were working.
It was a one-to-one, I guess.
That's right, yes. Sort of what we had done had produced the thing that told them, and they, and so,
mm-hmm.
I mean, by this time one knew the people one was working with fairly well, or vice versa, and so
yeah.
We were working together and had been working together for, you know, how many years? I don't know by then.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that a lot of the people working there were rather odd, to say the least. I wonder if anything comes to mind about them. Are there anecdotes or incidents that you recall about some of the people?
Just the general impression that there was a very odd selection of humanity, oneself included, possibly. You know, it was a very peculiar place. There were very... obviously very clever people, and they looked it.
She was saying as well, though, some of them were right on the edge, the verge.
I always thought that Alexander's eyes looked mad.
Yeah.
And he was brilliant, you know, sort of quite wild eyes he seemed to have.
I had heard, now I don't know from another one that was there, another one was at Bletchley Park, that in many respects they had to look after these guys, in the sense of they'd have to take them to the cafeteria and make sure they got something to eat.
Oh, I think that would be probably quite true.
Yeah,
yes, I would think that would be quite true.
They'd forget to eat.
That's right. That's the sort of person we're talking about. They lived in a little sort of
balloon
of their own. Yes. Oh yes, I'm sure that's true. That's the overall impression. They just looked like a madhouse, really.
So
I mean, that was one
place,
one of the things that I remember most vividly. The odd collection of people. Didn't look like anybody normal about at all. Well, if he was normal, he was probably in a uniform. You know, if he looked normal.
If he
looked
normal, he'd be in a uniform.
Yes, because he'd probably got himself joined up to do something and then was fished out for some talent that he had, which would be better used in such a place, I would think.
Now, you leave Bletchley to, after 3 years, I guess you were pretty tired.
Yes, but still associated with it, of course. It was only...
Yes. I'm not trying to imply anything else.
No.
But I guess with your medical examination and things, they decided they had to keep you.
Well, I went in and said, look, I've got this tummy trouble. The specialist I've seen has said that it'll go on as long as I'm on watch keeping.
Mm-hmm.
I really ought I really ought therefore to have a daytime job, and the only daytime jobs there were in charge of outstations.
Now, would that be because there would be more messages during the daytime?
Well, no, I think simply because they needed somebody overall in charge of the three watches, because they all worked watches as well. They worked 24 hours round the clock, but you need a single person possibly in charge of somewhere that is away from the headquarters of it, I think.
So now you were selected to go to Stanmore?
No, well, I did go to Stanmore ultimately, but I went to a little place called Adstock near Buckingham.
And
this was in fact the stable block of the house in which Commander Travers was billeted. He was billeted in the... I can't remember much about the house because the stable block was a little apart from it, and this little spot. We had the freedom of the garden by the back path, I remember, and I think there were two old ladies who lived there. I can't remember much about them, but this is where he lived. This was his billet, if you like. And I suppose he'd made use of the fact that there was a stable block and had been able to commandeer it through the fact that he was living there. And that's where we went, and in fact we lived about 4 miles away.
Now this would be what, how far from Bletchley Cross?
Oh, 12 miles, 10 miles, no distance.
And you would have, if I'm not mistaken, you would have what, then bombs in there as well?
Yes.
And so this is more of a, you were breaking the dial codes, is what you're...
No, they were still coming through, it was still the same sort of operation.
Yeah, but you were getting the menus and things, you weren't... the Enigma process wasn't moved from Bletchley.
No. This was just the bomb operation.
Decode.
That's right, and was sent back on the teleprinter when they.
So you had direct teleprinter. We had
direct
telephone.
We had direct teleprinter links. Every outstation had direct teleprinter links back to Bletchley.
Now, you stayed there for a while, and you went to Stanmore. Is that the idea, or?
Yes, I was there until just towards the end of May. May the 8th, end of the German war, operation finished.
Which is stuck, dead still.
Well, no more messages coming through, you see, were there? So, all they did from then on, actually, was to go over some of the past stuff in some of the bigger outstations. And they started to dismantle the operation, and they started actually with Adstock because it was one of the smallest. And I actually, in turn, I went everywhere. Before I went to take charge of Adstock, I had a week in Gayhurst, a week in Wavendon, a week in Stanmore, and a week in Eastcote. Seeing, I suppose, the operation completely. I can't remember the precise details of all of this, but I do remember going everywhere. And then we packed up the Adstock thing, and I went down to Stanmore for quite a while. Now, to be truthful, I cannot really remember what I was doing in Stanmore.
Okay.
This was by now 1945, and I was rather preoccupied by the fact that I was going to marry Tommy. And I can't remember what I was doing at this stage, except that I know the operation was running down.
It's grinding down.
Yes.
Now, when the end of the war comes, the machines were dismantled and taken away.
Yes.
All the papers would be swept up and...
Yes, I suppose so.
Now, what did they tell you about the Official Secrets Act? I'm sure
It's applied all this time. Remember, you've signed the Official Secrets Act. Boom. And really, by that time, there's no more any strain of this, you know, because you've become so used to it. It's just a part of the makeup, really.
Mm-hmm.
It never occurred to me.
Were you let on at all that it would come out?
Nope. Because at that stage in my life, I'd no idea about the 30-year rule on cabinet papers and sort of thing. I mean, I've known about that since, but even then, because in fact I'm a lecturer at the College of Further Education, and my two subjects are English and Government. And so, of course, I know about the 30-year rule, but it didn't actually occur to me that I didn't think that this sort of intelligence thing would be involved in it.
Did you feel later, with the histories written about the Second War and the great, about how these guys made fabulous decisions and things?
No, I laughed and laughed and laughed.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
You thought it was...
Well, not laughed, no, but I've been quite intrigued.
Found it, you got a good chuckle out of it,
yes,
if you like.
Yes.
Knowing that they had
very interesting, actually, to watch their television series of Britain at War or Britain at Sea or The War at Sea or something. Very interesting to see it sort of present.
Captain licks his thumb and then decides to go
sort
that
of,
way, eh?
Yes. Yes.
What was your immediate reaction when Winterbottom's book came out, The Ultra Secret? Were you shocked?
Yes, a sort of embarrassment, I think. I'm not quite sure. Not embarrassment so much as yes, I think a sort of embarrassment in a way that it should actually be made public. Because as I said to you, I suppose I've got over it now. But once you've been told and learned to accept and in fact sort of develop the appreciation of the security bit, so you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to over dramatize it, but you know what I mean. It just becomes a part of the thing. So you don't. I mean, that's it. And I don't even.
You never dreamed that you'd be talking to me today, I gather. It's talking about the
operation. I mean, I've been terribly interested. There was a series of talks by Peter Calcorbaresi on the radio, which was really the first thing I heard about. Well, I had to get the... I had to listen to one of these, and then I got the printed copy in a weekly magazine which reproduces some of the TV and radio things at home called The Listener. And I was absolutely fascinated. And everything I can get hold of now that has anything to do with it, of course, has intrigued me no end. But still, funnily enough, don't talk about it.
I assume you've read what, Ultra Secret, Intrepid?
Well, I've read Intrepid. I've read This Ultra Goes to War. I haven't read The Ultra Secret, isn't it? That was one of the first ones that came out, isn't it? I'm not sure that when I'd seen that I would have connected ultra with anything, because that's not a word that I ever remember
ever
being
used. Yes,
sorry. Ever. And I'm not sure that anybody...
So you called your bomb, which is, Agnes, was it?
The original one, yes.
Yeah, they all had names.
I think
names.
She disappeared in the end. I can't remember what happened to Agnes. That was the first one they made to try out. Or the first
Fury
one...
Male.
The first one that successfully did anything with anything at all, and that was that rather rickety affair, as I remember it. It was not nearly as sophisticated as some of the others. There was also at one point a tape machine or a punch card machine in our hut too. I can't remember what that had a name. And I can't remember what that was. That was a great big thing, and that was obviously a sort of a development on from what we were doing, but it was doing something different.
I'm thinking of the books and things that you've read, would you say that they are fairly accurate?
Well, the one I've just read is certainly, in as far as I'm able to judge, and therefore I would suppose the rest of it is very.
That
was wrong.
Ultra goes
to war. Yes.
You were mentioning there were things though that were left out. Is that correct?
Well, reading it, one just felt that it skated over some parts, but I couldn't really put my finger on it. That was possibly because you cannot get every single syllable into a book, can you?
Yes.
But that's the impression I got. That it was... says enough to be interesting and says enough to be accurate and factual, but there are things that aren't said as well. But I'm not sure whether that's just my impression or...
Now, you left the service at the end of the war. Is that correct? Or did you stay with the...
No, I got married in August 1945, and I think I was out by September. But that was a little ahead of what I should have been out by, but because by this time I was married. So, what the future would have been if one had stayed in, I don't know. One would have been dispatched elsewhere, I imagine.
Did you get any special recognition for your service at Bletchley or
No. But there was a BEM awarded to the Wrens, and they took the oldest girl and gave it to her, and I wish I could remember her name. I can't.
The British Empire Medal was given.
Yes.
One was selected as a representative.
Yes, that's right. I can't remember what her name was now, for the life of me.
No knighthoods came with the Wrens way or
no.
any of that good stuff, eh?
No. Monetary bonuses or anything like that. No. All unsung.
All of the unsung hero, is that the...
I would think, yes.
Well, I think we've got a pretty much case, Mrs. Dunn. Thank you very much for making the time. I know you're on your way back to England tomorrow, I believe.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And thank you. It's been great. Thank you very much.
Okay.